Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud.
Welcome to the Prism of America's Education with Karen Schoen, and today's chapter is Psychological Manipulation at Work. I don't know about you, but man, I am so conventioned out. I would rather try to put everything in a summary than go through verbatim, because that would be impossible. So this week we're going to talk about the DNC, and next week we can talk about the GOP. Maybe I should have called this show DNC Lie, Cheat, and Steal to Gain Power, because that's really what they did. I really, really, really tried to listen to the entire convention, and every time I started listening, I got so concerned that our young people are learning nothing other than how to be a victim and be depressed. The gloom and doom that emanated from that convention was incredible. All we heard was everything is awful, there's no good left in America, everything is anti-racist, racist identity, politics, no matter what, and it was just depressing. Can't describe it any other way. Even the uplifting speeches were depressing because they were so filled with erroneous information. No wonder why these people rely on drugs and alcohol to get them through the day. Why would you want to get up every morning and listen to this garbage? It's really a very sad state for America to be left in what we will follow if the Democrats win this election. Because what they are laying out is 100% pure Marxism. And really, what is Marxism? Well, that means to solve every problem, you need the government. And then you need more government. And then you need more government. And by the time you're done, the government has everything. And instead of getting paid for your labor, you get an allowance. And there's a big difference between that, because when you are paid for your own labor, it's your own money, you can spend it the way you want. When you get an allowance, you'll only be able to spend it on certain items. So basically what the DNC wants to do, actually they are trying to trick you into believing that they know best and that you should be willing to give up your decision-making power and turn it over to them, the communist DNC. You're going to give your life over to somebody that you don't know, who doesn't know you, doesn't know your circumstances, but knows how to regulate your life? How does that work? I'm unsure on that one. What we're looking at right now is a group of people who think that they are so superior that they can lay out all kinds of rules and laws for us to follow. And they don't have to pay attention, because those same rules don't apply to them. They only apply to us. What is that saying? Rules for thee, but not for me. So they ignore the rules, and then they often do the opposite. So you can look and see what the rule is, like the Affordable Care Act, when it's really the Unaffordable Lousy Care Act. We call that hypocrisy, as they follow their own path. But what it really is a form of psychological projection. They did the criminal act, and what they are doing is laying out circumstances so that it looks like you did the criminal act, and then they will turn on you first. They will leak that information to the media, and then expect the media to run with the anonymous source that gave them the information, get it spread out all over the country, and when it comes down to, oops, they made a mistake, hardly anybody sees it. Well, in reality, what have they really done? Well, they know how to describe the act, and then they can blame you for not for doing that same act. So they can describe it to a T because they've done it. They call this procedure normalizing the act. And then as they blame their opponent, leaking it to the media, spreading it out all over the place, oops, it seems as though somebody from their side did the same thing. But that's just politics because everybody does it. And that's what they get you to think. One of the most hypocritical that I saw was this past week when Mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, called the police who she has been demonizing defunding, calling horrible names, not allowing them to do their job, but she called them to her street so that they would stand guard, so that the protesters, rioters, would not go on her street. In New York, crime rate is way, way up, and the mayor is busy closing churches and closing the city, but allowing the, quote, peaceful protesters to terrorize the people and destroy property. Now, people say, what can I do? My answer in this case is vote, because in the case of Chicago, out of the total population of voters, 27% of the voters voted. So one quarter of the people voted to put Lori Lightfoot in office. Shame on the 75% that did not vote. And the exact same thing happened in New York. Mayor de Blasio was elected by 24% of the voters, of the registered voters, because they did not vote. That's why I say every vote counts, and that is why it is important to vote. So please, during this election cycle, the most important one that we will ever face, please get out of your house and go and vote. Go early. Go voting day, it does not matter, but go to the voting booth where that is the only place you can be somewhat assured that your vote will count. We have to recognize these things, these psychological manipulations, and be able to point them out to our friends, especially those that may go into the voting booth, and put a circle on the Democrat. I can't imagine why anybody would want to make themselves a slave of these people who have demonstrated over the past 50 years that they do not care about us. They do not care about the American people. They only care about one thing, getting reelected and maintaining power. The parade of the Hollywood elite and the sheeple from the Democrat Party are demanding things like getting rid of ICE, getting rid of the police, opening the borders, abort more babies, transform America. What will America look like? It certainly will not be any utopia that we dream of, to live in a world without the police. Just take a look at Seattle and Portland, and they brought a guillotine into the suburban community and started beheading a stuffed bear while screaming at the people in the houses to get out of their houses or to invite them in so that they can, quote, provide security. Why would you need to provide security if you're the one that is doing the damage? So far, the DNC has blamed all of its failures on Trump and the racist American people. That's us. So this is a political party now that is advocating the opposite of what they are doing for us. And they call that blame shifting, where they blame all of their failures on the opposing party. They will never take blame for themselves. Hillary Clinton, if I remember, is the queen of blame shifting, because weren't there over 100 different reasons as to why she didn't get elected, especially never mentioning she was a lousy candidate. She didn't even campaign. And when she did, she took half of the American people and told them they were trash. They are deplorables, a basket of deplorables. And then she figured that we would turn around and elect her. We might not be that smart, but we certainly are not that stupid. If I had to get up every morning and face the world that they described, I certainly can understand why these people do drugs and drink and even commit suicide, because the depression that was described of America that was in that DNC convention was pathetic and appalling. Way that you portrayed the country, telling the people that they're victims and it's okay to go and riot because your rioting is really reparation. Another little psychological maneuver that I noticed was called cognitive dissonance. Now, cognitive dissonance means that you believe something and the actions that you're taking are contrary to what you believe, but you can't stop because the crowd is more important than you as an individual being ousted from the crowd. And that ousting is more terrifying than going against your own ideas, your own morality. This cognitive dissonance was way on display. And it's no wonder that these people turn to drugs and alcohol and psychologists or psychiatrists, because their inner turmoil is eating them up. They can't think of anything else. How can they go out and burn houses and kill people when killing is wrong? So they have this inherent disaster coming forward and they can't face it, and often it becomes suicidal. A psychological maneuver that I saw was making everyone into slaves. Why slaves? Because you are a victim, and as a victim, you are dependent. And now you are finding out you are dependent from those evil white people who forced you to come here and put you in bondage and made you into a slave. I don't think anybody knows the real history, because Virginia was going to repatriate a large amount of their slaves when the war was over, the Civil War, and the slaves came to them and said no, they'd rather stay on their master's plantation than go back to Africa. People don't realize that not a very, very long time ago in the history of the earth and humanity, people didn't have laws. What they had was, if you were strong and you were able and wanted your neighbor's whatever, didn't make any difference, then you just went and took it. And the spoils of war, they called that. It didn't matter whether the spoils were property or people. You just became a product of losing a war. We also have the pleasure of watching groupthink in action as the peaceful protesters are following the rioters, who are screaming to people to get the fuck out of your house. And I am not going to be politically correct, because that's what they said. And that's another thing that we have to stop doing, because when they use descriptive language, we have to report back in the language that they used. And by being politically correct, we are losing, because political correctness is nothing other than censorship. And simultaneously, these riots are appearing all over DNC cities. So the crowd might think, how did these people get started on this? How did they know what to do? How did they know how to riot? Where did the ammunition come from? How come they're all doing the same kind of thing no matter what city that they're in? Well, the reason for that is, for the most part, if you look at the demographics, they went to college to learn how to be an activist and riot. Rioting has now become their job. So activism is the tool that they use to set up the riot, and that's their job. Day after day after day, they get paid to do this. The sad part is the majority of these people don't live in the cities that they are looting and robbing, which is why they can do it. They have no allegiance to these cities. So it's very easy to recruit these people when there's no work, and the Democrat mayors can make sure that there's no work. And then this way, you can have an out-of-control shutdown that nobody does anything about, because after all, it's only property, and property is covered by insurance, unless it's not, because you're a new company. What else did we learn from this DNC convention? Well, we learned that masses of American people are angry and they're living in fear, and that they are demanding diversity, and that they want open borders, and that they hate the police. But let's go back for a second. What is diversity? Diversity means separating different elements, keeping them separate. I thought we fought a war and over 600,000 Americans died so that we could put things and people together. Well, now they want to separate it. And they do not care that America fought a war to end slavery because it doesn't fit what they were taught. It does not fit their narrative. We believe that everybody would be able to do the best that they could do, be the best that they could be, contribute to their neighborhood, and together we would all peacefully exist. We didn't care what color you were, what religion you were, what that was your business, what you did in your life, what your sex life was. Nobody cared. The only thing that we cared about was, will you be an asset to your family? Will you be an asset to your community? And will you keep your place nice like everybody else? That's all that mattered. And if you are a nice person, then we made new friends. Nobody really cared about anything else. We have to stop allowing these lies to continue. And one of the ways to do that is to vote. But the other way to do that is to get involved. And that's where we are sorely lacking. People say, how did we get here? And I have to say to them, look in the mirror, because it's our fault. We were silent. We were the one who dropped the ball. Yeah, we were tired after World War II, and we gave our power to that big, nasty old government, full of people who don't care about us. They only care about the power and how much money they can make from that power. They must instill fear, they must instill anger, and they must divide the people. They must stop us from talking to each other because that's what they're really afraid of. There are more of us than them. And if we talked, we would be more united than divided. And we have a lot more in common than they want us to think. So I think it's time to take off our masks and start talking to each other. Not texting, not Facebooking, but actually having a real conversation with a human being.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello everyone and welcome back. This is Karen Schoen with Prism of America's Education, and I have with me a very special guest. She has done amazing things and her information is so important, and I want to share some of the things that she has done because people come to me and they say, Karen, I'm only one person, what can I do? Well, we have a wealth of information coming out of Lori Cordova Moore. And Lori, I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely, Karen. Thank you for having me on the program.
Well, it is a pleasure, and I cannot. I am very curious to find out as to why and how you started your organization called Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. So I would like you to tell everybody what motivated you, why you started the organization, but most of all, where they can find you, because that's always important.
Absolutely. And thank you for the question. Yes, we started PJTN, Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, and your audience can find us at pjtn.org. But I started in 2005, but it really began earlier, right after 9/11, after the horrible attack on our country. I was obviously devastated, like everybody else was, having a strong Christian background, evangelical Christian background, studying the Bible for many years. This totally caught all of us off guard, but I knew that it hadn't taken God by surprise. And so I began to spend a lot of time in prayer. I was homeschooling my children at the time to really, just determine what we were going to do or what I was going to do about it. I knew that, I had been involved in Republican politics and conservative politics. I had lobbied for the pro-life cause for many years. But this was a real challenge. And as I began to pray, I remember being at a gathering of other Christian women, and someone had mentioned that an evangelical Christian in Alabama, a lobbyist, had introduced a resolution to support the state of Israel in Alabama. It was the first state in the country to do so. Wow. And all of a sudden, it was like it came out of those words, came out of this person's mouth, and it hit me right in my heart. And I knew we were to do that in Tennessee. And so I contacted her. She sent me the language of the resolution Alabama had introduced. And so being in Tennessee, I took that resolution to several state legislators that represent us in our district. And that's what began the process. And, it's interesting, Karen, because being in Tennessee also is the headquarters of the KKK. And I never even considered that it would be an issue. But as I started the process of trying to push this resolution through the legislature, I started to see the evidence of anti-Semitism coming from these Tennesseans who happened to be Christians. And so that really was my first wake-up call to experience anti-Semitism at the very beginning. But we were able, thank God, to pass that resolution. It took quite a bit of time to get it through the process, but we saw miracle after miracle as we were moving through the process. We knew who our opposition was. They were going to great strides to prevent us from being successful. But we ended up having the Speaker of the House. It was in the House that it was being held up. We had the votes in the Senate. That wasn't the problem, but the House was the issue. And the Speaker of the House at the time, Jimmy Nafee, I went to him. He was my last resort. This was my last ditch effort to get it passed because they were getting ready to shut the legislature down in a couple of weeks. And I went to him and said to him, I said, sir, I have this resolution. I have the votes for it. I have the votes to get it out of this committee, but the chairman is refusing to allow it to be brought up for a vote. And he says to me, he says, do you know who I am? And I said, yes, I do. Now, let me just give you a little background, Karen. He is a Lebanese Christian, or he was a Lebanese Christian.
So he had a small understanding of what this was all about then.
Oh, yeah. Very personal. His family was from Lebanon. And he said, you know where I'm from? And I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, so you know that I shouldn't help you. And I said to him, I said, sir, Israel's called to be a blessing to all nations, yours and mine. And he turned around and walked away from me, didn't say a word. And not 2 minutes later, the sponsor of the bill comes running out of the committee hearing room saying, get in here. The speaker has your resolution. He's going to make them vote on it. And it was, I was shocked, but it was just a miraculous thing. So once we did pass that bill through the legislature, that was really, Karen, my first taste, like I said, of anti-Semitism, but also watching the response of the people and seeing other evangelical Christians who cared as deeply as I did about this resolution to see its passage. And I knew that God was doing something here. So we started hosting people from Israel to come in, experts to come in to talk about the war on terror. Because remember, we were, you know, back then there was no confusion about Islam. That was right at the beginning. We knew we were under attack. We knew that this was coming from Islamists. But of course, now it's become a bit distorted and people don't want to be offensive, so they don't talk about it. But back then, it was very clear. And it was 2003 that I made my first trip to Israel as a gift of the Federation in Nashville. And I went with for the G8 summit there in Jerusalem. And it was the most powerful trip I had ever been on. And I got to see firsthand the false narrative that we hear in the mainstream media, because the reality on the ground in Israel is a far cry from what we hear in the mainstream press. And, you know, we're told that, you know, the IDF soldiers are bloodthirsty baby killers and that they're dragging Arabs out of their homes and taking their homes away. I mean, you've heard it all. Yep. But after that first trip, and I saw the disparity between the reality and what was being communicated, I came home and I told my husband, I said, honey, you know, all the work that we've been doing, all these commercials and all of the documentary films that we're doing, we're changing our focus. We're going to focus on Israel. Nobody is telling Israel's story. Because I did. I started doing research to find out who else was doing it. And nobody was producing content like this, informative content. And that's how we started with our producing our Focus on Israel show and our documentaries. We knew that if we could get our message to a global Christian audience to teach them about Israel and bring the facts to people, it would change the 2,000 years of anti-Semitic thought that was pervasive within Christianity. Yes. And so, you know, Karen, yes. I had never studied the persecution of Christians against Jews, or the persecution of Jews by Christians. I had never studied it before. And when I started to do the research, I couldn't understand why Germany would allow somebody like Hitler to come to power when Germany, as I had always been taught, was a Christian nation. And, you know, there were Catholics, there were Protestants. But how could a Christian nation, an educated Christian nation, allow 6 million Jews to be led to the slaughter? And a very small number, 23,000 righteous Gentiles, I think the Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial in Jerusalem, has accounted. But I couldn't understand why so few Christians were willing to speak up. And that's when I started studying about Martin Luther and his teachings, and he wrote a book called The Jews and Their Lies, and it was a book that Hitler actually quoted from to legitimize what he was doing. So I produced our first documentary. It's an award-winning documentary about the history of Christian anti-Semitism.
You are a doer, and that is what I like, because too many people will go and cite a problem, and they'll say, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem, like what the Democrats just did, but they never offer any solutions. And we need solutions, because one person has the ability to make a huge difference if that person acts. So I know that you have a to-do page.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted you to share some of the to-dos with some of the listeners, starting with your Leadership Institute. What is that all about?
Well, we are constantly looking for parents and taxpaying citizens on a local level to help prepare and train them to take back local control of education. One of the sad realities is more people in an election year are focused on the presidential race, or they're focused on the federal races, senatorial races, congressional races. Nobody pays attention to what's going on in the local community. And that's where, it's just like what you said earlier, Karen, the school board is the bedrock of our political system in our communities. The school board also holds the key to the future of America, because they hold the key to the minds of our children. And if we are not paying attention as citizens, it is our civic duty to serve. We serve in jury duty. Of course, we're mandated. I think we should make it mandatory that we spend so many hours attending school board meetings or getting to know our elected officials, because the sad reality, Karen, is most people don't know who represents them. And had I not found out, in fact, with the textbook issue that we just talked about, when I found out that my school board member, who I went to church with, he was a member of our congregation. He was an elder. And when I found the textbook, I went and met with him. I said, look at this. How did this happen? And this is coming from an elder in a very pro-Israel church, evangelical church. And he said to me, Lori, we don't have the time to review these textbooks. I looked at him and I said, oh my gosh, you're the gatekeeper. You're the one that's going to protect our children. You're the one that the Bible talks about, that if you deceive any one of these, my little ones, it would be better for you to have a millstone wrapped around your neck and to be thrown into the depths of the sea.
Nothing more important than making sure that our children learn the truth. That's the most important thing.
Absolutely. Years when all this started, Karen, and this is why the leadership are training and teaching people to become more engaged in the local politics. When I saw this happen with this elder, I realized, oh my gosh. And when I saw the quote in the textbook and the disinformation in the textbook, and Fox News actually picked up the story and they ran the story for 2 weeks. We were hearing from parents and citizens all over the country, Karen. And they were sharing, they were sending me screenshots of the textbooks, some of the content in the textbooks. And it was very similar to the content that was in the textbook being used in Williamson County. And that's when I realized, oh my God, this is not just one school district. This is not just one state. This is nationwide. And I realized if this is what we're teaching our children, we are going to lose this constitutional republic, because our kids are going to turn on us. And Karen, look at what's happening.
Exactly. Take a look at the demographics of the people who are rioting. Many of them were in college. Many of them are white. Many of them are really only there because they don't have a job. And to them, this was a job. And when they went to college, they learned activism, which included how to riot. After all, they were being coached by Bill Ayers, who was the major bomber of the Weather Underground, which just became like Antifa, like BLM. So the procedure continues. They're following what Hitler said. They're following exactly. Get into the schools, because in 12 years, when those kids graduate, where do they go? They work in our government. They work in our bureaucracies. They work in our nonprofits. And what have they learned? They've learned to hate us, and they've learned to hate America.
Yep. Anybody?
If we want to continue that, then Keep it up, folks. Don't pay attention. But there are too many tools out there. We should never be in a position to say anymore, I don't know, how did that happen? Should be in a position right now where we say, I'm going to go to a local school board meeting. I'm going to go to a local town meeting. I'm going to run for office. I'm going to read a textbook. I'm going to get involved. And the story that I tell constantly is that when we were reviewing the textbooks, one of our members went to a local school board meeting. Excuse me, not the textbooks. One of the pornographic books. Went to a local school board meeting and started reading a passage from this book. And the chair of the committee put down his gavel and said, "You can't read that here. It's inappropriate for a school board meeting." Oh, really? But it's in our school libraries. It's in our media centers. That's okay. But in front of a school board meeting, it's not okay. Folks, the way the game is played, the school board will deflect to the Department of Education, and the Department of Education will deflect back to the school board. And basically, the textbook company that provides the most donation to the right people are the books that get approved. That's not the way our children should learn. Lori, I want to thank you for your information. This is incredible. Tell everybody again where they can find you. And if you have a couple of seconds on the Leadership Institute, because that's also another thing we need to get involved in. We need to become leaders. We need to learn to be the experts and not be afraid of somebody else saying something.
Absolutely. Well, the audience can go to our website at pjtn.org, and I would love to hear from you. If you are interested in learning more about how you can be involved on a local level in your community to make a change, then we want to hear from you. All you have to do is email me at info@pjtn.org and just let me know that you want to learn more about how you can get engaged in your local community. It is so critically important. Karen, these are the easy races to win. If you want to run for school board, if you want to attend school board meetings to stay engaged in what's going on, what's being introduced, and we will help you to promote what you're doing in your local community, because no matter where you are around this country, we've got groups that are involved in almost all of the states are represented, with the exception of Alaska. We haven't gotten up there yet, but we're working on it.
Oh, good luck. This is a wonderful, wonderful group to get involved with, people. Our kids, they're our future, and it's going to be up to us to decide what future we want them to have. We want them to be slaves to communism, or do we want them to be free-thinking Americans that can be the best that they can be and have the opportunity for greatness that only America can offer? Thank you, Lori. Thank you so much, and hopefully you will come back pretty soon and let us know more great things that PJTN is doing, because that's what we want to see, people who are doing.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
wanted to talk to everybody about COVID and what is going on with COVID. The good news is the death toll is going down and the amount of cases are going down. And the information that I am going to share with you comes from the COVID-19 dashboard by the Center for System Science and Engineering at Johns Hopkins University. So you can go to Johns Hopkins, you can put in COVID-19, and the same dashboard will show that I am looking at right now. I'm looking at it, though, from a different point of view. And please understand, I truly believe that any death due to this disease is certainly a travesty. However, as I said before, the good news is that the death toll is going down, which means that the virus is becoming more and more under control, especially as new drugs are being introduced as both something in the beginning, so that if you feel you're getting sick, you have something that can help you, and something in the middle and the end. And I'm not going to talk about the specific drugs. I will leave that up to Dr. Joe. What I want to talk to you is the statistics. After reviewing the statistics, I began to realize how they are being manipulated by the media. This, to me, is a result of a poor math education, because when kids are not taught math in the early years, it makes it very difficult for them to absorb numbers or any type of math operation, especially when you introduce things like percentages, ratios, proportions, interest, things like that. So the lack of a proper math education is a big problem, and I see that firsthand. Math was always considered a universal language. It didn't make any difference where you went. It didn't make any difference what country you were in. Wherever you were on the planet Earth, 2 + 2 = 4, until now. And by the confusion of the math that was put into Common Core with the intent of keeping the kids back 2 years and not giving them a full understanding of math, math became something that was no longer absolute. And as long as you could describe an operation or how you got to your answer, it was acceptable. So if 2 + 2 = 5 for that time, for that kid, that didn't make any difference, so be it. That's not the way it works with math. Math is an absolute, and math is something that is incredibly invested in the truth. So let's take a look at the numbers and let's see how we were being manipulated. First of all, it says on this website that the cases are by country, region, and sovereignty. And of course, they put them in descending order. So the top was the most, and of course the most cases were in the United States with 5.8 million cases. The next was Brazil with 3.761 million cases. So here we have two countries, but what is interesting and what is not being discussed is what is the total population of those countries. And if you compare the number of cases with the amount of the population, are the percentages way off? Is America hugely outnumbering every other country? So let's take a look at that. America has approximately 330 million people. Brazil has approximately 212 million people. So right away, Brazil has 100 million people less than America. America had 181 or has 181 deaths total in the United States. And of course, America is put on the top. Next, followed by Brazil, which has 118,000 cases. So America has 181,000 cases, and Brazil has 181,000. 18,000 cases. Of course, that puts America way on the top. However, if we take the percentages, something very strange happens. Brazil had 3,761,000 cases against deaths. And if you make the percentage of what percent of the people that got the disease passed away, then what would be the percent? It is approximately 3%. If we take a look at the United States, who has 330 million people, and of those, 181,265 contracted the disease and died. Okay? What percent of the population is that? What percent of the amount of people who got the disease in America passed away? It's the same 3%. So even though America had more people contract the disease and more people die, it's the same percent that went on in Brazil. Now here's another interesting statistic. If we take the amount of people in the country that got the disease and died in America, then that is 0.05%. If we look at Brazil, the amount of the population and the amount of the people that died, it's the same 0.05%. So here we're being told that President Trump went out and killed people and didn't pay attention, and yet it's the same statistic in Brazil if you work with the percentages. Now let's take the United Kingdom for a second here. Let's see where we can come up with that one. The United Kingdom has 65 million people. Of those 65 million people, 41,573 died. If we compare that to how many people contracted the disease, which was 333,000, we will find that 12% of the people in the United Kingdom who got the disease died. Yet the United Kingdom is on the bottom of the heap because they only count how many people died, how many people contracted the disease. So without a clear understanding of math, you have no idea that America should not be at the top of the list. President Trump did a remarkable job in making sure that everyone had every single thing that they needed as quickly as he could. He heard the situation. He analyzed it. Unfortunately, he was given misinformation. But even with all of the things that happened, he still was able to make sure and secure that a minimum amount of people in our country died. Remember, he was told that we will be facing deaths of upward of 2.5 million people if he did not act immediately. Pastor Rick, I have invited back again because the Florida Citizens Alliance is on a mission and has two new incredible issues that we are going to be discussing. These are fabulous things that you can copy in your state. I'm urging everyone, copy what's on the Alliance if you don't live in Florida, and do the same thing in your state. Create an alliance of multiple organizations and focus on our kids. I have seen the new initiatives that the Alliance has created, and you are my go-to person. So can you please tell everyone what the Alliance is up to?
Well, we're up to two things specifically that we should talk about today, maybe a third with the Hope Scholarship. But we kicked off earlier, I guess it was last week, a fall challenge for fundraising. I often say to people, do you know how much it costs to do $100 worth of benefit? And the people look at me kind of funny, and then they get it, because the obvious answer is it costs $100. And it's true for us. It's true for every organization. And we really appreciate the support people have given us. But we're back with another challenge and another opportunity for people to help us be their voice all across the state of Florida. We're calling it the Liberty Challenge. We believe that liberty is under attack from many quarters in this country. And we especially think our children need to understand both the blessings of liberty and the importance of defending and protecting and nurturing our liberty. And so our Liberty Challenge is a big, big goal. We're hoping to raise $100,000 in the next little more than a month. We have some donors that have stepped up, and we're almost halfway there with the challenge. And so we need to finish that process. So I'd like to invite people to go to our website, goflca.com, goflca.com. And they'll see a link right there on the homepage to the Liberty Challenge, and they can learn a little bit more about what we do. There's a video on there that'll explain who the Florida Citizens Alliance is. It'll explain a little bit of what everyone's monthly contribution can help, or if you want to make a one-time contribution, for example. Well, sometimes don't connect all the dots, but one of the things is that if somebody would like to make a $300 donation, that funds a college intern for 1 month. And that people might think, well, that's only 1 month. But guess what? If somebody helps us with 1 month, we've only got to find people to help us with 11 more. And so we appreciate every little bit somebody can give us. Some people prefer a recurring donation where they can give a set amount every month. That would be terrific. If we had 1,000 people that would do that, that would go a long way toward helping us expand our reach and influence across the state of Florida and help more and more children. Because contrary to what some other organizations say, we really are this way. Our focus is to help the kids. We don't make big money. Our top leadership doesn't get paid. We just care about the kids, and we want to get some good things done. We've already done that with Common Core. We're continuing that with some of the social studies initiatives. And, well, the list could go on, but maybe I've talked long enough about that.
No, but a very, very important fact, as we are learning what some of the organizations are doing with their fundraising efforts, I want to state again, the Florida Citizens Alliance does not use any money other than to help the kids. None of the people who are on the top of the organization receive any funding at all. Everything is used for the expense of helping the kids, multiple trips to many legislators, writing bills, helping to write bills, putting on events that will expose what is going on in education and bringing out the truth. And speaking of events, I think the Alliance is having another event. Can you tell everybody what that one is, Pastor Rick?
We are, and ticket sales just started today. So as we speak, we've just started rolling out the opportunity for people to buy tickets to hear Dinesh D'Souza talk in Naples, Florida on October 7th. Dinesh D'Souza is a remarkably informed and he has a gift for conveying some of these principles in ways that just make it clear and understandable. And a couple of weeks ago, I heard another person interview Dinesh D'Souza, actually Dan Bongino. Some people may remember Dan. He was at one of our events. And Dan interviewed Dinesh, and wow, it caught my attention. And I thought, this is something. If we could pull this off, we need to find a way to get him to come to town before the election so that people can get an idea of what we're talking about when we talk about the importance of teaching our children about liberty and how, in too many cases, they're being told the joys of socialism, which that's odd because there are no joys with socialism. But we started investigating this idea. We've had some terrific sponsors step up to help us with that. And in fact, another one today heard about it and called us and said, how can I help? So people have been really helping with these kind of things. But if you're going to be in Naples, or if you'd like to come to our event in Naples, it's October 7th at 7 in the evening. And we want to invite you to come and hear Dinesh D'Souza. He's going to specifically be talking about how socialism impacts businesses. And not many people are aware of how that could be a devastating thing to our country if we allow some of these socialist initiatives to go forward, because no business will escape and all businesses will suffer. So that's Wednesday, October 7th. You can go to our website and look at the events section. There's a link on the homepage as well to the D'Souza event. We're going to have it at quite of an interesting venue. Nobody will believe me when I say we're having it at a grocery store. Well, that's really true. One of our friends in Southwest Florida opened this new store. It's just remarkable. I hardly know how to explain it to people, but it's really an experience to go to the grocery store there. And up above, he has a seating area that's available for use for some of their dining options that he has there in the store. But it's also available for use for an event like this. And he got behind this and invited us to have it there. So we're going to have it at Seed to Table. That's in Naples. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be quite remarkable. And I want to encourage people to come. If you're going to be in our area, if you want to make an effort to be in our area. But if you think you want to come, now I know everybody says this too. But if you think you want to come, buy a ticket sooner rather than later, because we have a very limited number of tickets and we can't go over that. It's just impossible to go beyond that. So if you want to come, get in now. Don't we all love saying that?
You're absolutely right. And the thing to remember, the most important thing to remember, is that the goal of socialism is communism. And their answer to everything is more government, more government, more government, more government, until there's nothing left for the people except what the government will allow them to do. And nothing is more evident than in our businesses, where the government will get to pick winners and losers. So think of all of the cylinders that we will have with their failed business plans, and this is what our government will look like. This is a recipe for disaster, but if you don't know the truth about it, it's hard to explain it. So please, if you can, and if you're near Naples, please go and go to the Dinesh D'Souza event. But most important, take a look at the Florida Citizens Alliance website. There is so much information there. We're just picking it apart little by little. But there is so much information there for people who live in Florida and for people who live in America to be able to do the same thing in your state. If we do not get a handle on education, I will guarantee that our children will be communists. Period. That's the end of the way that it works. Pastor Rick, thank you so much, and we will be back again next week and learn new things that the Alliance is doing that we can share with the rest of America, and hopefully they will be able to do the same thing. Thank you for joining me. Please tell everybody where to go and where they can find the information, and I know there's a big contribute button on the website, and I hope everybody will take advantage of that.
Sure. Just find us at goflca.com, goflca.com. And if we can help in any way, reach out to us. There's an email contact on that website. We'll be glad to try to help you help your children.
Thank you so much.